How can you be part of a religious community that straight up denies
sometimes
science
it feels
or
like
sees
the church
it as
is trying to hold
the church
on
seems to be stuck in their ways when the rest of the culture
why are they so
is
obsessed
they
with
keep trying
people?
To get answers
I would
but they
never
don't even
be a
know
part
the
of a
questions
church that
asked
I'm not welcoming
the church is the most vocal political voice against immigration.
Some churches still
the
don't
one they claim
that
worship was
lead.
Actual
do you understand
how can your story be good
that is
when
the majority of people on
the church seems to be stuck in their ways when the rest of the culture
is how is that actually
it seems like so much of the church is more concerned with being a good American, anti-critical thinking, homophobic, too narrow, judgmental, disconnected from what is truly happening in the real world.
The church needs therapy.
Welcome to the newest episode of The Church Needs Therapy. Now, you haven't heard from me personally in a while because I have had such great guests. I feel like for this first year of the podcast, it was usually around 50% of the time I would do my own thing, some sort of teaching, some kind of conversation starter. It was basically me providing some sort of a journey or path for you. Then the other half of the time it would be guests. But I think the last three episodes have all been guests because I've just had this great run of people who have done the podcast and I could have waited, but then I just decided to put them out. And yeah, this, even as I approach almost the first year, I think I started this in August of last year. I'm just consistently amazed at the guests that I've had. I'm so grateful for the people listening in. And then when the time's right, like moments like this, there's still this there's things I want to say, there's things I want to give to people, and there's journeys, experiences I want to take people on as I continue to not only lead, write, and do the things I do, but to reflect on what it means for the church to need therapy for the sake of healing in the future. So, I don't have a fancy title right now while I'm recording this. Perhaps I will when I actually post this. But I really just want to do something simple today. I want to do this short episode about some things that are frustrating and the good that really matters. The things that are frustrating about the church for people who are growing and evolving and changing and still desiring to follow Jesus, desiring to follow the way of Jesus, and still trying to believe in the church. There's always frustrating things. Then also, there's these regrounding moments and experiences that clarify, that remind us, and that show us what matters and what's really good as well. So to begin, the frustrating part. It's just a few thoughts I've had recently. There was this moment in Christian media, and it was there's an article in the Washington Post too, perhaps some broader outlets covered it as well. But recently, I think it was IVP, which is InterVarsity Press. I might be mistaken on that. But IVP or some other publisher was going announced that they were coming out with a, I don't know if it was called a Patriot's Bible, but it was some Bible that said God bless the USA on it. So imagine having a Bible which tells this story of God's people, which were under six different empires. This is a story that is written from the bottom side of history. People who have been on the underside of power, people who have been beneath empires, oppressed by empires, exploited and crushed by empires, all the way up until the time of Jesus, who was also in a marginal group under the Roman Empire at the time. So you have this story of redemption told about people on the underside of history, and now people want to publish a Bible that says God bless the USA on top of it. Remember, historically speaking, while we are not structured in the same way an empire was, America doesn't have an emperor. If you look at the way power and economics work here, America would be a lot more like the Roman Empire, the Babylonian empires, the Assyrian empires that you see the Jewish people under in the Bible, then it would be the people of God who were usually under these empires, right? So to write God bless the USA on top of a Bible would be like the early followers of Jesus having documents, maybe letters from Paul written to the church, and they said on top of it, God bless the Roman Empire. So here you have this subversive, small, marginal group challenging and critiquing the empire with this new way of Jesus. And imagine these documents come, letters from Paul, but the top says, God bless the Roman Empire. Something there wouldn't fit. And even this Bible that was supposed to say, it was going to say, God bless USA on top of it. It was supposed to have the Constitution in it. So think about these founding documents of the United States of America being placed in the Bible, which is a global and historical document. It is not an American thing. It is a global and a historical document from the East. And you're going to put the American Constitution in it? Wouldn't that be confusing? Wouldn't that be so easy for people to see that as... Wouldn't it be open to the interpretation that the Constitution is somehow just as sacred or inspired or as important as the Bible itself? Do you know how dangerous it is to assert or to even put close together a nation's founding documents along with the Bible, which has the historical narrative of Christ as a whole? Right? When this God Bless the USA Bible was announced, there was this huge uproar because the God Bless the USA Bible was or would have been, because I'm going to get to that, but I don't think it's being published anymore, but it would have been this massive, idolatrous, and dangerous artifact that supports the white Christian nationalism that is destroying the public witness of the church in our country. It would have helped perpetuate the myth of American exceptionalism. It would have helped reinforce that absolute lie of manifest destiny, this idea that somehow the Spirit of God was leading the people to create the United States, even with along with the subjugation, marginalization, oppression, and murder of indigenous people with an economy built on the back of slave labor. Like, manifest destiny is this idea that somehow it was God's will for all of that to happen. And the God Bless the USA Bible would have been the ultimate symbol of the problematic presence of white Christian nationalism in our country. It reminds me of this old tweet that Rainn Wilson, who played Dwight Schrute on The Office, wrote, where he wrote, "The metamorphosis of Jesus Christ from a humble servant of the abject poor to a symbol that stands for gun rights, prosperity theology, anti-science, limited government that neglects the destitute, and fierce nationalism is truly the transformation in human history." Which forces me to ask the question again. How does Dwight Schrute see the disconnect between the nationalist, God and guns, patriotic Jesus and the actual Jesus of the Gospels with more clarity than millions of Christians in thousands of churches today? A humble peasant refugee Jesus preaching a kingdom of enemy love and nonviolence to Jesus somehow becoming the mascot for God, guns, and country. There is a version of American nationalism that camouflages itself as Christianity. It has its own icons, its own idols, its own creeds, its own worship songs, and it looks nothing like Jesus. Right? Some of those icons, idols, creeds, and worship songs are crosses draped in the American flag, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon. It has its own creeds, you know, like the Pledge of Allegiance. It has its own, it has its own worship songs. Like, I forget, like what's the song where it's the bombs bursting in air. That's me trying. Gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. That is a flashback to elementary school right there. But what I forget what that song's called. Star Spangled Banner. I think that's what it is. If not, you can tell me. I remember in grad school, for the first time, hearing a professor offer these kinds of critiques of white nationalism or Christian nationalism or patriotism or whatever it is, how dangerous it is when it's woven in with the gospel. And the professor said, that song is a war hymn. He said it is a hymn, like a sacred song about war. The bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag was... He's saying that song is like a worship song for nationalism and for patriotism. And this God Bless the USA Bible, if it would have been printed, would have become the ultimate symbol of this dangerous... toxic cocktail of nationalism, whiteness, and the gospel all woven together, mixed together in a drink that just ends up being so bitter for so many. Now, I think they canceled it, but the reason why I bring this up and I spent the first 9 minutes talking about that is it's one of those moments where I'm like, are you serious? Like when I see this as a human, as a Christian, as a person who takes Jesus seriously, as a person of faith, and especially as a leader of a church, I'm like, how can this even be a thing? And things like that can frustrate me when I first see them, right? I get frustrated with church, Christian culture, and media and all of that. Like sometimes, can I just confess some things right now? Sometimes I see pastors and I'm like, how do people still listen to this person? It sounds like they're speaking to children. How do adults listen to this? This looks and feels and sounds like youth group for adults. I remember... this person I was listening to give a talk years ago was telling a story about this famous, you know, televangelist preacher on TV. And he said, you know, I would wonder, he said, I would watch the televangelist say to thousands of people, he would say things like, you can smile again. And the people in the audience would be taking notes rigorously after he said that. And the speaker said, what could they possibly be taking notes on? What could you possibly be writing down after he said you can smile again? What notes are you taking? Right? I'm confessing here. I can easily get frustrated sometimes when I see these things, right? Sometimes if I see young people following, quoting, or posting more progressive Christian voices, but I know they're still a part of or still on staff at churches that are the exact embodiment of what the people they're quoting are critiquing and are saying are the problem in the first place. Sometimes when I go to Christian bookstores, I get depressed because I see everything that's selling and I'm just like, what? How are these the voices that are supposed to lead us to the future? Or recently, I see conservative Christians as the biggest and most outspoken opponents of critical race theory. I'm like, how weird and irresponsible and immature is that? You mean the analytical tools and the conceptual lenses that allow us to see the ways that institutionalized white supremacy and racism have crushed communities of color, that have marginalized entire groups of people, that have created systems that benefit some people, usually people who look a lot like me, and completely neglect, avoid, or tokenize small groups of people that they don't seem, the system doesn't seem built for them. And now that people are more and more familiar with the analytical tools and the lenses that help us see that, so we can dismantle it, so we can create a community and a country and a nation that actually works for more and more people. You mean when we finally have the lenses to see that, you're going to be against that? The energy God gave you as a follower of Jesus, you're going to use that energy to try to dismantle the lenses and tools that are actually there to help us dismantle the injustice and the oppression and the institutionalized forms of racism that are have created massive equity gaps in our... You're going to try... Those things are dismantling so we can have a better country, and you want to dismantle those things, okay? Oh God, let me take a deep breath here. I can get frustrated at times as a leader, as a Christian, when I see all that. Right? At her worst, the church maneuvers, I'm speaking specifically about the church in the United States of America, at her worst, the church maneuvers for political power, becomes antagonistic toward everyone who believes differently, creates enemies unnecessarily, gets into bed with nationalism, lives in denial of her complicity of racism in the United States of America, and maintains very childish ways of seeing God. And all of this can frustrate me. Do things like that ever frustrate you? Some of the most profound, evolved, loving, inclusive, and brilliant thinkers who are Christians in our country are virtually unknown to the mainstream church. And a YouTube video from a pastor talking about the dangers of Twilight has over 300,000 views. Do you understand why I can get frustrated at times? I don't let myself stay there. I'll feel that frustration. I'll laugh about it. I can feel that cynical part of me wanting to just lash out and make insensitive and flippant comments to the masses. But no, I feel the frustration. I name it. I sit with it. I don't allow that oppositional negative energy to drive me in unhelpful ways. But I feel it at times. I let myself feel it. I know what I'm doing, and I move on. But yes, there's times where church, Christian culture, all that stuff can frustrate me. And if you ever feel like that, that's okay. And there's a lot of necessary critiques within there that we need to use our voices to speak up about. I just don't want people to stay in the frustrated part. Because the church, at her best, is still so good. And I still believe when the church is shining and radiating the presence and status quo upending love of Christ, there's nothing like her on the planet. And even I was reminded of that from a couple things this weekend. So I want to end after all that, right? So that's what I wanted to just say, confess, let's get it out there. I want to end with just a couple stories, a couple things, even from just from this weekend, that remind me of the beauty of the body of Christ. Now this weekend, my wife Christine and I were actually just talking as we were driving home from the beach. And then we started talking more when we got home. And we observed some things this weekend about people who are a part of our church. I'll tell you a couple examples and stories. This weekend we saw just a group of friends who met through Imagine, our church, and they met in what we call living rooms, these smaller spaces in people's living rooms that they share, where they're learning to share life together, carry each other's burdens, enjoy life together, learn to care about the world together, follow Jesus, right, through the world together, these amazing spaces. And just, yesterday or today is just a picture of a group of friends, you know, probably all around their 30s, who all met through the living room, who I know share life deeply, who I know have been there for each other and other friends in the toughest times. And I see a picture of them still close during COVID when there's such limitations, still close, connected, enjoying life together, involved in each other's lives. And I see that, and I'm like, that is the fruit of the body of Christ. And I just cherish that and those connections so deeply. I see, you know, this is kind of through Insta stories, how we see things. And then we see another group of girls, you know, two who I didn't know, and then two other girls who met in the same living room, actually, on this hike together, just, you know, enjoying the day, beautiful day in Hawaii. But also, I know these are people who share life deeply together. COVID, a lot of restrictions, and yet these people are still connected, still involved, still carrying each other's burdens, still in each other's lives, still enjoying the world together, still encouraging each other. The fruit of the body of Christ. Then I see it, more stories of two couples from our church who are on a trip to the Big Island together, right? I wasn't invited, whatever, it's okay. But one of the guys is actually on staff at Imagine. He's our community pastor, my guy Larry and his wife Chanel. And he is on staff here, and his wife Chanel, him, her and Larry are some of our best friends. They're like this at the core. If the heart of Imagine is beating, they're in the heart with us, carrying the burden of pastoring with us, some of our closest friends, some of the people really holding together the sort of, you know, depth of the church. And I see them on this trip with another couple from our church, and to even talk about more details, they're on a trip with a couple from our church who happens to be a gay couple. And I bring that up because that moves me and makes me believe and be hopeful even more, because the church has historically, and still is, and so in the majority of spaces, not a safe space for gay people or gay couples, right? Think about couples together. The church is really not a safe space for gay couples to be together, to be themselves, to follow Jesus in a community. So one, it's not, the church as a whole isn't always a safe space for gay individuals. Now you have a gay couple. But then now that trip is not only is a gay couple on a trip with a straight couple from our church, but the straight couple is, besides my wife and I as co-founders and lead pastors, like the people who would be looked at as like the highest level, if you will, of leaders in our church. So here you have one of our pastors, leaders, people we trust and love from our church on a trip with a gay couple who has been a part of our church for years. And to me, that's just, it moves me and it gives me hope and it makes me believe, because those pastors who are normally seen as people who are a threat to your well-being if you're gay now are your greatest allies and friends and champions and pastors and guides and people you just enjoy life together with. Like all of, just these simple things reminds me of the good of the church. And the other story is, besides seeing those things from people in our church, I am going on a trip to New York City at the end of June. I was invited to this event called, I think it's called Edge of the Rooftop. It's kind of a mystery to me. I know somebody reached out to me. It was crazy because somebody whose book is on my shelf reached out to me, who I never knew personally. And he said, hey, this other person, you know, Brian McLaren, who I had on the podcast and whose books I've read for a long time, he said, oh, Brian reached out to me and said you would be a good person here, so he wanted to invite me. So already, just this great invitation, it's something I'm excited about, right? And I put on my Instagram stories, like, hey, does anybody I know who works for Hawaiian or whatever have buddy passes or a K-Fair? They're basically discounts at Hawaiian Airlines. Like, does anybody I know have the hookup? I've gotten buddy passes from people before. I've gotten K-Fairs. Hawaii's small. Everyone knows each other. Like, maybe somebody I know still works for Hawaiian, right? I just, you know why I do that? Let me just put this out there. I am very frugal. Like, I am frugal as hell. I don't like to spend that much money on clothes. I normally have a budget of I don't like spending more than $15 on t-shirts. I don't like spending more than 25 bucks on pants. I normally don't spend more than 50 bucks on shoes, although I've gone higher the past however many years. Like, I don't like spending money on clothes. I'm like the weirdest sneakerhead who doesn't really buy expensive sneakers. I just know what they are, but I'm like, yeah, but I'm never gonna buy them. I just like them, right? I'm like that kind of guy. Even tonight, my wife was like, hey, babe, when the kids go down, you know, because we need to get some groceries, let's just get a poke bowl for dinner. I'm not kidding. One of my first thoughts is like, man, if like we each get our own, like how much is that? Like, oh, is that kind of a splurge? Like that. I'm frugal. I didn't grow up in a house where my parents just bought me stuff that I wanted. Like, I couldn't just say, hey, mom, like we're going through Target or whatever. I'm like, hey, that's cool. I really like that. And my mom would be like, oh, let's get it for you right now. No, if I said, wow, I really like that, I wish you could get it, my mom would say, I will get it for you. Your birthday's in 9 months. Like, I didn't just buy stuff. They taught me frugality just through action, and I appreciate that. So that's me being frugal. So I put that out there, and our friend Kristen from California, like, you know, one of me and my wife's best friends, where her and her husband Nick were just out here recently. She texts or she DMs or whatever and responds and says, yeah, like we'll help sponsor a ticket, like for the New York trip, right? And I hit her back. I'm like, nah, like you don't need to do that. Like, I'm not posting this because I can't afford a plane ticket. You know, I'm posting this because if I can get a discount, I will. And then, you know, she texts like me, my wife and her husband, we all have like a group text, and she texts again and is like, no, like, I already have a group of, like, four people who want to, like, you know, help you buy a ticket. And I hit her back. I'm like, okay, I know. I think she's an Enneagram 2, like my wife. You know, Enneagram 2s, they're helpers. They want to do that. I don't want to, like, be strong. But I also want to communicate. I'm not really looking for people to, like, sponsor a pastor for this trip, right? I'm, like, not really looking for that. So I said, hey, look, I appreciate all of this so much. I really do. But I'm not like trying to raise money. I just kind of put it out there for a discount. And she was like, nope, like pretty much it's too late. I'm already doing this. So I'm like, okay. If an Enneagram 2 is already totally committed to helping, just get out of the way. So I say, hey, look, I'm going to reiterate, I'm not looking for money, but if you insist, here's my Venmo, right? And then out of nowhere, I get like around $200, and it's all just from our closest friends in California. It's like a group of friends we had in our 20s. And all of a sudden I'm getting Venmo that night, like, oh, Kevin's NY trip, like whatever. And even though I didn't ask for it and I wasn't trying to raise money to do it, it still was so cool to have friends who love us and love me and care about my work and my future and my vocational life and my creativity enough to even consider doing anything like that. All of those people I mentioned from our church, all of my old friends who I met through what was called a life group at our old church, like a living room, these smaller community spaces. These are the best friends we all met through the church. Those friendships and even the fruit of their generosity, that's all from the church. It's all from the body of Christ. And no matter how frustrated I get, stories like that remind me. It's people. It's connection. It's solidarity. It's joy. It's intimacy, it's friendship, it's generosity, it's serving each other, it's being deeply involved in one another's flourishing, it's truly caring for others, and through that, it's the miracle of the Spirit becoming the very presence of God in and through all those things. The church is the church is the body of Christ in this world. So we can get frustrated at, you know, these USA Bibles. We can get frustrated at all different types of things about the church, and I'm with you. But when we accept those things and when we move forward, the church is the body of Christ, and it's, and when she's shining, radiating, refracting the light, the love, the warmth, the presence of Christ in this world, it's still the best to hold. It's the most amazing space I've seen that has the power to hold together a space for the Spirit of God to heal, transform, illuminate, redeem, restore everyone and everything. So let's get frustrated. That's all fine. And let's be regrounded in the good of who the body of Christ truly is.